Hello, my friends. My goodness, can you believe how steadily we are moving to the end of the year? It's that time of year where we can feel pulled by the forces of family, season, and consumerism. I want you to remember to come back to you. Check in with yourself throughout the season with a pause, a breath, a word of self-compassion, a word of kindness. And there are a couple of special things I have planned to support you. First of all, for all my yoga teachers out there, I am leading a trauma-informed yoga teacher training this January 24th and 25th. It is so easy to traumatize or re-traumatize a practitioner in yoga spaces. In this training, you'll discover what it means to recognize and support trauma survivors in yoga studios and to bring yoga teaching off the mat. The info is on my website, laraland.us, under consulting, and of course, we'll have it in the show notes. And second, but certainly not least, I am doing very, very special episode on this podcast on December 22nd. I will be leading an alignment and manifestation workshop based on my life purpose journal and year-long coaching program, My Bliss Book. So purchase your copy of My Bliss Book in advance so you can do all the meditations and visualizations along with me, get past your blocks, out of your way, and start manifesting the life of your dreams in 2026. And that is also linked in the show notes and available on my website. I am so excited to bring this offering to you and to see what you cook up for the new year. Hi, I'm Lara Land, an integrative clinical mental health counselor, author of My Bliss Book and The Essential Guide to Trauma-Sensitive Yoga, and Trauma Sensitivity Consultant. And this is the Beyond Trauma podcast. Here we explore healing, growth, and what it means to truly thrive. You'll hear from therapists of different approaches, wellness coaches, and people with lived experience who talk about how to build resilience and connection, shift habitual responses, and live in your values. Your time is valuable to me. My goal is for you to walk away from each episode with an insight or practice you can put into action to build more ease and clarity in your life. Here we go. Beyond Trauma listeners, did you know you can always start over? Giving myself permission to begin again at any moment has allowed me to constantly evolve, and it's a tool I use with all of my coaching clients. It's also the premise of my first book, My Bliss Book. My Bliss Book is an undated life purpose planner that comes with an automated coaching program sent directly to your inbox biweekly when you enroll using the secret URL found inside the book. You will receive my creative visualization meditation, encouraging you to move beyond social programming and self-imposed limitations and into visualizing your truest, most honest vision for your own unique life. Then using my Bliss Book, you will work backwards to develop actionable steps to meet goals throughout the year that take you towards your big vision. Have a habit of buying pretty planners and putting them down before they're finished? Not a problem. My bi-weekly emails provide just the nudge needed to pick up your planner again. And if you miss a few days, you don't waste your book. The book is undated, so you can always start again. My Bliss Book is available off my site, laraland.us, and is now 20% off for my podcast listeners with code STARTAGAIN. But hurry, this discount won't run forever. Hello, hello. We are back for an amazing episode. I know I say that a lot, but it's always extra exciting for me when I bring on a friend. That doesn't happen that often. And you know, I have great friends, but this is someone very, very, very special that I have on for you today. Her name is Julie McGuire. She's known up here as Queen of the Catskills. She's a high school English teacher, an outdoors enthusiast, and an avid backcountry skier. On November 30th, 2024, she completed a four-year journey to become the first woman to ski all 33 Catskill High Peaks. Julie volunteers as a trail maintainer with the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference and serves as a board member of the Catskills 3500 Club. You're going to hear us talk about those. She also volunteers with Winter for Kids, where she teaches her students from the South Bronx how to ski. She's currently pursuing a new project to ski the lower 67 in hopes of becoming the first person to ski the 100 highest mountains in the Catskills. Why is Julie on? Not just to talk about skiing, y'all. You are going to just be blown away by this. We talk about her past, trauma she's been through, how having a hobby can help you with surviving and thriving after trauma. What is it about hobbies, especially hobbies later in life? She talks about how to relax your nervous system to open up to signs and messages for the universe and how that has helped her. And everything is coming towards her and for her now that she's in alignment. I'm saying that. She talks about what meaning making has done for her and what she has seen when she brings youth into the mountains and how she sets goals, how she talks to herself, her mindset. I mean, it is just, this is an incredible, incredible episode. Julie is, a movie has been made about her. And we talk about that as well. And I hope that you will follow her and go see a screening. I know I will be. So you can check out the dates for that in the show notes, as well as follow her, Queen of the Catskills NY, on her Instagram, where a lot of that is present. So here we go. Yay, Julie McGuire. I'm so excited to have you on.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
I wanted to start, as you know, with just like a little preview of how we met, because I always get really excited when I have friends on, people that I know, you know, that I don't just reach out to through the internet. Although I did originally reach out to you through the internet.
Yeah, I have to say there's a lot of friends that I've made that way since COVID.
That's a nice thing.
Yeah. You know, people think that social media has gotten a very bad rap. And yes, there are a lot of negative things about social media, but I mean, it's responsible for like most of my friends since COVID.
That is so cool.
Yeah, I feel like I've found like an exalted purpose for social media, probably the way it was intended, which was to like increase
exactly
your social circle and making people feel more connected. And I've been fortunate that social media has been a pretty good thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, it has. You've exploded on the socials. And I found you, you know, through following folks that were involved with the Catskill 3500 Club, which I'm sure we'll chat a little bit about, and people that were hiking and that were inspiring me with their hikes, or just to find out a little bit of information about like trail conditions before I would do one of my hikes. Saw you in your posts and making all the records and then the skiing, which we'll talk about. And I just like slipped in there, the DMs, like, Julie, will you hike with me? I had a few hikes left. So thank you for being a role model and a friend. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background with hiking, and then that what turned into your backcountry skiing, or maybe the skiing was always there. And through our hikes, you know, we've had some really deep conversations. So I wanted to open those up a little bit to others to hear, like, you know, what we're thinking about why we do these crazy outdoor adventures.
Yeah. And I think to also get to, like, at some point, how I found it to be such an essential tool in transforming traumatic events into like evolution, into a higher version of yourself. So hiking. Well, I was always a resort skier. And then like, you know, I'd started dating, you know, who's now my ex-wife. And I've had a place in the Catskills since the early 80s, or like my family has, but I'm the only one that uses it now. So like we would go up on weekends, and like it was when I was with her that I started hiking. She was like, I would just be like, Katya, just tell me where to go. You know, like, you know, just tell me which direction to go. For some reason, I didn't even want to look at a map. Just didn't want to expend the mental energy. And I was like, so then we get divorced, and I kind of, you know, I wanted to continue doing these things. So I ended up, like, kind of like concurrently, I had started to kind of like, I had always seen backcountry skiing as the next evolution in my skiing, like getting off the resort and, you know, kind of going to the backcountry. And it was like right after my divorce that the universe sent me a sign, and I was like suicidally depressed. And then one day there's an ad from Powder Quest that I see, like, I don't know, on social media or something. And it said women's backcountry ski camp. And the three magic words, no experience necessary. It was three words that told, like, I just knew, like, Julie, this is the universe sending you a lifeline. I know you're too depressed to even ski, but take it. So I was backcountry skiing and I would like kind of try to learn as much as I could from guides, like when I'd go on my backcountry excursions. And then that kind of gave me the confidence to kind of like navigate like hiking on my own. So when COVID happened, that's really like when my life changed. So I was able to teach remotely and I lived up in the Catskills for a year and a half. And like, even with just hiking, I was just like, I was like looking at the list, you know, the 35, and I was like, oh, bushwhacks. That sounds intimidating. I don't know how many of these I'll be able to do, but my magic words that get me started on everything, let me see how far I can get. I don't put the goal of like the pressure of trying to finish something at the beginning. It's just like, oh, it'd be nice if I could do this, but let me see how far I can get. And within a month, I had done almost all of them. And then I kind of like had an injury and I had to like take like maybe like a few weeks off. And then, you know, I finished, you know, like the first round, like you have to repeat four in the winter, but I finished those. So
just so people know, we're talking about the highest peaks in the Catskills, and there's a list of them. And then to get membership into the Catskill 3500 Club, you complete all of them and you repeat these four again during the winter season. And some of them, these bushwhacks are, you know, they're not marked. So,
no, and even less so when I was doing them. So like with COVID, hiking exploded and the herd paths kind of like became, I mean, some of these paths don't even look like herd paths. They are like in better shape than some of the main trails.
Yeah.
But then it was like, you know, some, especially since I also didn't necessarily know how to find all the herd paths on the way up, even though I'd read about where they were, I just kind of like missed them somehow.
I usually find them on the way down.
And then I would like mark where they are, like with waypoints or whatever. So then when I go back, I was like, oh, this is where, you know, the herd paths are. But yeah, I mean, during my divorce, I had just had this like obsessive compulsion to climb things. And I think that it's really good and kind of, you know, like it's rigorous, especially like when you're climbing things on skis and you have like skis, you have your pack on, it's, and there's deep snow. So it moved a lot of the negative energy out on a regular basis. And I think that's key. I think it also, you know, it gave me a goal and slowly, like, you know, you make little progress along the way and it kind of builds up your self-esteem. And so it takes you kind of like out of that crisis mode and allows you to have a little bit of that emotional distance where the universe can then kind of like start, you start gaining perspective, you start gaining wisdom, and you kind of slowly rebuild yourself. And I think that could be with any like pastime, something that's a creative outlet, something that's a physical outlet, but something that gets like the emotions out. Because prior to that point, like, let's see, my wife left me like in 2018. So I had maybe like about a year where, yeah, I would be doing like the hike, like skiing on weekends and stuff like that. But it like wasn't enough. I still had like, you know, like 5 days out of the week to deal with. And I felt like I was really like just coping and not always coping the best way. And then when I got to live full time in the Catskills, that's when I felt like I was really healing and then eventually like evolving into something better. And I saw that, like, even though that was like one of the worst things that ever happened in my life, that I would not have had this amount of growth without it. I wouldn't be the person I am today. I wouldn't have evolved as much without that.
And your sharing of your story and how your hiking and skiing were really helping you to heal, I think a lot of people gravitated toward that and toward you. And it just led into even more and more opportunities.
Yeah, it was like I was essentially living, like, I guess I was agnostic, right? I was like, oh, there's a possibility that, and I don't really like to like say God, because there's so many negative connotations with it. I kind of talk about, like, I usually say the universe, and that's closer to my concept of what God is anyway. But I was essentially agnostic, but really living like an atheist. And during that period of time when I was in the Catskills, I would be out in the woods, even like, honestly, even when I wasn't in the woods, but I think it was like most apparent when I was in the woods, I would just like feel this presence. I was just like, what, am I imagining this? Like, it was just so like powerful. It was kind of like almost like something that was like hanging in the air. And I realized that there's like always something that's like kind of like in the background. We just never notice it because, you know, we're too busy, you know, like, oh, we got to get this done. I got to get that done. And I was like, wow. And then like all these good things started happening, like all these synchronicities and stuff. And it was so strange. Like you said, like I would post online and, you know, I'd like trip reports and then some insights that I would get, like, you know, while I was doing that. And I don't even know why I started adding that stuff in there, to be honest with you. But sometimes I would have like this powerful urge, like you need to share, like something was like pushing you, like you need to share this, you need to share this. Then people would like write me about how that resonated with something that they were going through. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Can you recall any of those? I know I'm like pulling at some memory here, or in general, some of the insights, awakenings, lessons that have come to you through this essentially hobby.
Well, I think I have like written about this, but this was kind of like a lesson from posting those lessons and those stories, is the importance of actually sharing our stories. So it really gives an exalted purpose to our trauma when we share the story about, this is the low point I was at. And like, I don't describe low points as a way of receiving sympathy or anything like that. That's not the purpose. The purpose is, because I know that when I've been at my lowest points, like there were a couple times in my life where I was suicidal. It was when I was in a very abusive relationship in my 20s. And I had multiple suicide attempts there. And then it was my divorce. And every second of the day was fighting off suicidal thoughts. And when you're in those low points, you think like, no one has ever hurt as bad as this. This is impossible to get over. I'll never get over this. So one of the reasons why I share these things is, you know, so people that are going through that know that other people have felt the same way and that you can make it through and good things can happen to you after that. And just because your life didn't turn out the way you envisioned it doesn't mean that it can't be amazing and maybe even better than what you envisioned. And that's definitely the case with me. Like, there are many things, like, I wasn't able to have kids. I struggled with fertility. I didn't have kids. My marriage ended. I mean, like, I'm still single now. It's not like I found a relationship, but like I have like all these other things that are going on in my life that I'm just like, that are so fulfilling. And it's not something that I ever would have imagined. So, you know, that's something that I think it's important for people to share. I think a lot of times people feel shame about these things that they've been through. And I know that my family was always very much like, don't ever tell anyone that you went through this. Don't ever tell anyone that. I think like I told my mom to like, I share some stuff, and she kind of saw how people responded. And I'm so proud of her. She's made so much progress. So my dad died a couple of years ago, and my mom is like trying to self-publish like a book on like bereavement and healing from it. And like, talk about doing a 180, where it's just like, oh, hide the things that you've been through. And then she sees how the Northeast ski community and, like, you know, the hiking communities have, you know, how what I've said has resonated with them. And she's like actually reconsidered, you know, like her position on this. And now she help others.
Wow. You know, I always say, and I find to be true, it's like the hardest people to influence are the ones that are closest to us, so the family members. So it's no surprise that you attracted so many people with your beautiful posts, and will send people to your Instagram. That's, you know, how I found you. But to impact your mom, I mean, parents are the hardest to change.
And I tell you, my parents in particular are just, they are not, in terms of self-awareness and self-reflection, that is not their strong suit. I think that the reason why I was someone that enjoys self-reflection and I am the way I am is because I saw that they weren't. And them being like these foils, I was like, I don't want to be like that. And so I kind of like reacted.
You've done the testing for the family and your mom has seen the positive results.
Exactly.
And, you know, you've given her permission, which is really what, you know, that's the message I see from you. You know, you're kind of like, we can look at your story and how you put yourself out there and find ways to kind of replicate that in ourselves. We're really a role model. I loved what you said about, you know, having a goal, but you don't have to say like, I have to meet this goal right now. Like, let's see how far I can get. I just love that as a way of like taking that pressure off.
Yeah.
And let's just see. And another thing you said that I found so resonant that I just wanted to repeat for people is that we don't know what that future could be. And a lot of times it's beyond what we could have imagined on our own.
It is like, I mean, just none of this stuff makes sense. The direction that my life has gone in and that skiing has been in the center of it. Cause it's not like I was competitor or something since I was a kid. It's not like doing these like mind blowing tricks or something like that. Like, you know, I really got obsessed with skiing like in my mid 20s, like when I was kind of like coming out of that abusive relationship. It's really something that I've like been doing in my adult life. And if you dedicate a lot of time to it, you know, you can certainly gain the skills that I've gained. So it's not like I'm at such an elite level. I'm a very relatable level of skiing, but somehow skiing's become part of my purpose. And I think that's another thing. I think when like people get older, they have families and stuff like that. They kind of start to see pastimes and hobbies as these frivolous things or just for fun. But, you know, you need to start of like put them to the side now because you need to make time for your responsibilities. And I think that's a mistake. I also think that people don't spend the time in trying to find something that they enjoy doing because it can be part of your purpose. You don't have to be the best at something in order for it to be, you know, part of your mission here on Earth. It can bring opportunities. It can bring community. Hopefully, it also brings a way for you to serve others. Like I'm bringing my students, you know, to the Catskills to volunteer. I bring my students for ski and snowboard lessons. And I get to introduce my students in the South Bronx to like a life in a world that they wouldn't normally have access to. And when I see how like, all right, all these bad things that happened to me have allowed me to help others. Those are the moments when I'm like, oh, I'm like, you know what? I'm okay that I went through this. I'm really happy that I went through this because now I'm able to do this and it's all worth it. So when you're using your trauma to eventually help others, it really is worth it. It just awakens something inside of you and you're just like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, like this is who I am. And without all those things, I would never have been, if I got my life the way I wanted to, I wouldn't have had these realizations, you know?
Yeah, it brings meaning to everything you went through. And I love what you said about, you don't have to be the best at it. I mean, this is very, very important and interesting. Like you said, you weren't like already a competitive skier or like, you know, an Olympian. And I mean, folks, if you see what Julie's doing, so the third person ever, right, to complete skiing, backcountry skiing, these high peaks. So she's essentially touring is what they call it, right, Julie? You're walking up.
Yeah, you're climbing up the peaks and then skiing down.
Unbelievable.
So the first woman and the third person, the first two to do it were the Kennard brothers, Jamie and Doug Kennard. And, you know, they did it together. And I think they finished in like 2014. And I don't think no one did it up until me. And like, now,
like, that could be me.
You know what? I like, my inspiration to do it really came from within. Like, I don't even think I knew at the time when, like, this idea was actually like in my head for maybe like a couple years before I actually started it, like the universe kept nudging me to do it. And I'm just like, no, I can't do that. Like, you know, I was like hiking. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I can't ski this. This isn't skiable. There's nowhere to turn. There's literally nowhere to turn. It was like, how am I going to control my speed? How am I going to get down these cliffs and stuff?
And which I still wonder.
Right. You know, I developed like strategies as I was doing it, and I just figured it out. And now Kyle Bittner is also finished. He was the fourth person to finish, and he's the first person to do it in a single season.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's just so powerful. I mean, I can relate a little bit, you know, having completed my high peaks with, okay, let me do some trailed ones. I do it with a guide. Then I started doing some solo ones and then some bushwhacking. That's when I brought you in to help me with the bushwhacking. And now I could see myself like doing a bushwhack on my own, which, you know, I wouldn't have never have imagined before. So I kind of guess that you're like, all right, let me try one. And I know you know, we're not suggesting anyone just go up into the woods and, you know, start skiing for the first time. I know you know, you do a lot of research. You've told me that, you know, a lot of your hiking and our hikes together are actually scouting out paths for your skiing.
Yeah. I had hiked the peaks from every route possible, you know, before I would ski them and strategize and, you know, following where storms dump the most snow and
amazing.
Yeah. So
amazing. And I really like what you said about like that you don't have to, you know, have been the best or want to be the best. Cause I think you're right that as people get older, especially with hobbies and maybe even younger kids these days, actually the way it is, it's like, if you can't compete at the highest level, like why are you even doing that hobby? If you can't either compete or make a business out of it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Yes. I can't monetize this. What am I doing for? Yeah.
What is the point? And so you're speaking to something very important about how we fill our pleasure time, our play time.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I just like skiing. Yeah. You know, like when Forrest Gump is running across, like, you know, the United States, and they're like, why are you doing something? I just like running. And I'm like, yeah, I just like ski touring. And
do you think that to get the benefits, and I want to talk a little bit about like what you think came out of like, you know, moments that you might have been scared or in pain, or, you know, the doubts that come up when they're like, have I lost the trail? How those things have spoken to you. I'm just curious, do you think that folks need like a very challenging activity to get the kind of growth and pleasure? Because sometimes you're talking about community, and that could come from maybe knitting or a book club. So
I don't think it needs to be something. Actually, I think the more intimidating it is, the less likely you are to like start. So I think it actually is a good idea to start with something that like might, you know, seem like manageable. And then like, you know, as you kind of like build your confidence, you kind of set like higher goals, or maybe you like want to branch out a little bit more. But I just think something where you can see progress. And I think like little like increments of progress, I think that's what's important, because that's what keeps you going and that's what keeps you motivated. And like you can make progress in knitting, right? Like anything that you can do that kind of makes your nervous system calm down and your ego defense mechanisms lower, so that then you're open to the wisdom that the universe is trying to instill in you. And I really think that allows you to channel the wisdom. And I really think that that's how that works, is that when you're relaxed, you're able to channel things, because we don't know where those thoughts in our head come from. It's not like we really understand like consciousness. I really do think that there is a form of channeling. And something that I learned in being in the Catskills for that year and a half was how important that kind of like being in a more relaxed state is in order to perceive these things. It's a lot harder to do in the city. And I was like, it was much different in the Catskills.
Yeah, getting in the right environment. I mean, it's definitely easier being in nature and being in the mountains for those of us who connect to mountains strongly. Yeah. So what you're describing is, for you, it takes your nervous system to a calm state. And in that state, you're able to tune into or receive wisdom.
Exactly. I think that's how it works. And it was that realization that I was like, you know what? I want my students to experience this. And I asked the universe, I was like, oh, it would be really great if you could find a way for me to bring my students into this. Like, the universe really made it happen. And also, like, in terms of the skiing, the Northeast Ski Community Health, like, I put it out there. And then, like, someone wrote back, like, my friend was like, oh, Julie, meet Brandon at Winter for Kids. And so that's how the skiing part came in. And then the volunteering, I was asked to join a committee with the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference. And they were kind of like, they're trying to find a way to get like more volunteers or something. And I was like, hey, what if we tap into high schools and stuff like that? They need service hours. You know, this would be great. And then, you know, you're kind of like getting them interested early. And then you're kind of like bringing in a younger demographic. And actually, like, a lot of people said no. Like, everyone was just like, oh, no, that's too hard. There, blah, blah, blah. And then Charlie Gadel, who happens to be the supervisor for the Catskills, so I had my Catskills connection, was like, oh, Julie, I think that we can make that work. Maybe they can do, like, the Catskills Roving Trail Crew or something like that. And then he and I just made it happen inside.
So tell people a little more. So your job is an English teacher.
Yeah, I'm a high school English teacher in the South Bronx.
And you after discovering how much you received from the Catskills and the mountains and the skiing, you were like, universe, show me how to bring these kids into it.
And it just...
And these are kind of a few different programs that you're doing. So I want people to really know about them. So one is that you bring the kids up to ski.
I bring them. So Winter for Kids, that campus is in New Jersey. It's like in Vernon Township. It's like a couple miles from Mountain Creek. So that's where they go skiing and snowboarding. They get lessons. Winter for Kids provides all their equipment, their, you know, outerwear. And I volunteer on the snow with them teaching. And then separately with the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference, Charlie Gadel and I organize these trips to bring the kids to the Catskills. And like, I mean, I didn't even know that it was going to be like in the Catskills. It didn't have to be. I thought, oh, well, Harriman or something is probably closer. And Charlie's like, oh, but I'm the Catskills supervisor. I'm like, you know what? Even better. Because I get to bring them to my special place.
And what happens when they come up here? Can you describe that a little?
Yeah. The first time I took them, like, I didn't know what to expect. I had like a lot of worries. I was like, I know that walking uphill is going to be something that was hard for them. Because even if you're a fit person, if you're not used to hiking, it's really difficult. Because I know some people that are like ripped, you know, and like, but when it comes to like hiking, they're on the struggle bus. And I thought that though maybe littering or like not appreciating the environment was going to be an issue. But no, well, I mean, like, they were tired. The uphill was hard. Yeah. But I ain't going to lie about that. It was. And we didn't have to like go all the way to the summit. Like, we were just, but I took some students to the summit and then we hiked down. So that's usually how it goes. Oh, some of you can come to the summit with me. You still have any energy left and the rest of you can like stay down here. But I'll never forget this. They were like, and this was like during mud season too. It's like May. So it's not exactly the most beautiful time of year, right? It's not like it's October. They treated everything on that trail like it was the most precious thing they had ever seen. Like, I don't know. I always feel like I get so excited when I'm talking about this, like, cause I'm like remembering it and just like, wow, look at them, you know? And like, I just, I don't know, like other people usually like them telling it to don't feel the excitement that I feel, but like, I just, they're like, oh my God, a caterpillar. And they're like losing their minds. And they're like, oh, miss, let's put this on the side of the trail so like nobody steps on it. They're like excited to see worms. I swear to God. They wanted to see worms. They wanted to see snakes. They wanted to see anything. They were so excited. And they were like, so just, they worked so hard. They cleared like 25 water bars. And I remember there was this student who like we were having some conflict in class. I like this one particular class that I had. I swear to God, I have never met a class that has been so resistant to assigned seating. Like, usually it's like, you know, yeah, they resist in like the beginning. They might resist for a few months and they get used to it. Till June, Lara. God, I was like, they almost wore me out. But I was like, no, because they were so like noisy that if you didn't have this, like you could not teach the class. And she came. I was glad she came because this has become like my trick now. If I'm having trouble with a student, like we're not vibing, I take them into the outdoors and then, you know, our relationship changes. And she was totally different with me after that. And she even said, like, while we're out there, she's like, yeah, you know, I feel like, and she like made this hand gesture as though like, you know, kind of like, you know, she felt like calmer than she usually does. I was like, oh, fantastic. This is exactly what I wanted. Like them to feel like less anxiety and be in a different state of consciousness and feel this relaxation. And then like people would say hi, and then you would say hi back. And they're like, oh, wow, it's like a community out here. Like, yeah. So like all these things that I wanted them to experience, they experienced. And it also made me aware of how little teachers actually know about their students. And I've been guilty of this too. So it's not like I'm better than anyone. We think we know our students based on what we see in the classroom. And we're always like, oh, kids today, they don't work as hard. They're lazy. All these negative things, because that's what we're seeing in the classroom. But who the hell is excited about writing a rhetorical analysis essay, you know? Oh. Then you take them into a different setting and all those traits that you want to see, they demonstrate everything. They're helping each other. They start sounding like little teachers to each other. Like, how are you going to learn if you don't get up? Like, I've heard them say that to each other when skiing, and like they become like us, you know, and then they kind of develop an understanding of like why we are the way we are with them. I mean, it's just, it's so great. It really, nature brings out people's highest selves. And even to like circle back to what you were saying in the beginning about like, you know, our conversations and stuff in the outdoors, you know, that's like another thing that I love about the outdoors and why I wanted to bring my students there is that everyone's guard is like lowered. And then people just start opening up about themselves. And you learn so much about people. It's like one hike is like at least three dates.
Yes.
Like information, you know? And people, they're not opening up because like you're forcing them to. It's not like anything that's like contrived or coerced. It's like because they want to. And then I learn everybody else's stories. And I'm like, and I have so much more respect for all the people around me. Then it makes me aware of like, oh, wow, everybody has stories and everybody has something that they've overcome and is worthy of respect. You know, it's just such an eye opener.
That's incredible, Julie. And it's true. I think I was thinking about, you know, when we hike, we're kind of in a line. So, and they say like kids open up in the car often because you're both facing forward and you're kind of, and this is something that's used in somatic experiencing and therapy as well, where instead of that traditional face-to-face sitting across from your client, you might sit next to them and look out at the same direction that they're looking.
Oh, that's fascinating. I guess maybe it's like a shared experience because you're both looking at the same thing.
That's right.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're gazing ahead together. And I mean, it has multiple impacts. I mean, one thing is it's less intimidating, right? Like when you're walking and, you know, that someone is face to face asking you questions, that's not like your nervous system is not going to be relaxed. But, you know, if they're not staring you right in the eyes looking for that answer, it's easier to express this other idea that you're kind of looking out at this shared experience together. It unites you in your consciousness and in this kind of special way. And then, of course, just doing something else, like the rhythm of the walking. Some therapists have like sand gardens in their office. Sometimes it's better if there's something else going on with the body, and then the words just kind of start pouring out. I guess it's kind of like when you're getting your hair done or something too.
I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So I see why that's happening. That is a beautiful thing. And you're bringing those students up every year?
Oh, yeah. So they go twice a year. They do fall and spring maintenance, like little trail maintainers. And they keep coming back, you know, even when they're like hot. Last time they were freezing, of course.
Yeah. Because you never know up here what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, it was May. And it was like, I took them for their first overnight and we stayed at Frost Valley. And I was like, guys, remember we had like this like random like polar vortex or something in May? And it was like in the 40s and there was like supposed to be like even snow or something. And I'm like, guys, like I just like I couldn't reiterate enough to them like how cold it was going to be. So like the girls were pretty prepared and then like all the boys were just like nothing but hoodies. And like I especially in the South Bronx, like I'm aware that maybe not everybody has like coats and stuff, but like they had them. They just were being kind of like boys. It's like, I'll be fine in my hoodie. Which it was okay when we're doing trail maintenance. It was more like when we're doing activities at Frost Valley that like, even I had like, I'm prepared. I'm an outdoors person, but because it's like more standing around and not as physically demanding, like I was freezing. I was getting out gloves and things. And
they made it through. And I'm sure
they still love it and they still want to come back.
It's a story later, right? Remember last year?
That's what I told them. I'm like, it's going to be a story later. And then also Frost Valley has like pretty much like no cell service and like the bunks and stuff. You can really just get in the dining hall, which is good because then they actually got to like play game. They're like playing like night tag or something, or like, so like they're playing games and stuff. I was like, good, good. It was like, they almost were like, you know, 90s teenagers.
I was talk about shared consciousness. I was literally like what we used to play in the 90s.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so restorative.
Yeah.
Well, if there's any way my listeners and I can support that or your ski program, please let us know.
Oh, I absolutely will. I have to, you know, every year it's like a matter of kind of like figuring out if like the school can cover the cost of things. So that's like the big thing. So far we've been able to manage it, but like buses are really expensive. That's the main cost. Like buses are like a couple thousand dollars every trip. And you have to use like the buses that are like the DOE approved ones and stuff like that.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, use us and this community to support that work if you need us, because I think what you're doing is extremely powerful.
Oh, thank you.
I wish there were more schools and teachers like you, Julie.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. We need to like replicate this.
Yeah, that's what I would like to do. I would like to replicate this in other schools.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm here for that vision. So
yeah, I know. You and I on our next hike, we got to figure this out, how we can make
it'll
this
come to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll invite Charlie Gadel on the hike and we can figure it out.
I love this.
It's kind of like easier to do on the side than through an organization. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like just organize it yourself. Don't ask permission because people are going to say no. Yeah. That's kind of like what Charlie and I did. It's like everyone was like, no. And we're like, okay. And then we just made it happen.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Oh, and I'd love to hike with the both of you under any conditions. You never know what you're going to get here. You and I know, like we started, it was like almost like summer at the bottom of our first hike together. And then it was a full on blizzard. But
it was crazy. What month was it?
I think that was April. I think that was
April. Wild. I was like, what's going on?
It was. I mean, we were in every possible outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
So it must, I mean, I imagine you've hit moments like that, like the weather changes or maybe you've lost your trail, or what do you do when you face those challenges?
Fortunately, like with technology and stuff, like even if you lose the trail, like you'll probably still find your way, assuming that something doesn't happen to your technology. Like it did on Lone and Rocky, but I carry backup and like I knew I would still find my way, because with Lone and Rocky, it's like, all right, well, if I get down from this, I just follow the Never Sink to the trail. And, you know, like it's, I remember on Sugarloaf was like nothing, at least in terms of my project skiing the Catskills, like happened where I felt like I'm going to die or something like that. It was more like, oh, okay, well, I'm have to like I'm on a heightened sense of alert right now. With Sugarloaf, I really underestimated how long it was going to take. So, you know, like Roaring Brook, that parking area isn't plowed in the summer. In the winter. So I was like, all right, I don't want to park there, because I saved Sugarloaf because, you know, that peaks like crazy for like when there's a good storm and things would be like more filled in. So it just snowed like 2 feet. And I was like, all right, I don't want to get my car stuck and have like no service. Let me park at Mink Hollow. I'll go up the west side and I'll ski down the east side, which is more ski friendly. And I'll come back around the Mink Hollow Trail, which kind of side hills along Sugarloaf. And so like by the time I got to that Mink Hollow Trail, like it was getting dark. And then, which like, you know, wouldn't be, I was like, all right, well, maybe let me look and see if like I can just like go along the road. Maybe that's better. I was like, oh, that's a lot of miles. So I was like, all right.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Then I noticed that the storm had actually blown the snow like on the trees so that it covered all the trail markers. And like, I mean, that shouldn't be a problem, you know, because you're like, oh, well, I can still like use the map to like stay on the trail. But the thing is, like in winter, like after storms, even like when you're on the trail, sometimes it doesn't even seem like a trail. It seems like it's like a crazy bushwhack and it's impassable. So that's what I dealt with. And it was taking so long. I was like, oh my God, I think I'm going to be out here until 1 a.m. Like, I swear to God, I was like, I know I'll make it out.
Okay.
Like, I wasn't worried about that. But I'm like, this is going to be crazy.
Because I'm curious how you talk to yourself. You know, that's kind of what I was trying to point out. So, like, what I'm noticing is, I mean, first of all, you're very prepared. And you're leaning into your preparedness. You're looking at your options. So, and you're not, you know, you're telling yourself this might take a while, but I know I can get out.
Yeah. And that I had like, you know, we don't have cell service in the Catskills, but I did have a moment of cell service. So I did like text like some people from the club, like we're in a group chat.
Yeah.
So I texted them just to let them know
where you are.
This is going on, FYI. But it was kind of like, you know, there's like a lot of switchbacks and stuff on that trail. So then it was like hard to tell like when the switchback was. And it's like, should I be above these ledges or should I be below these ledges? Like, it was just taking forever. Like, I even have like a photo and I was like in the dark by myself for like hours. Like,
wow.
Like, I mean, you're,
well, I don't
like,
suggest this for people who aren't prepared. And always, when you go out, you know, one of the things we always say is let people know where you're going and what time you expect to be back. So it's good that you have that group chat. And
yes, and after that, that's when I got the Garmin inReach. I was like, so I should probably get like a satellite communication.
Okay, there we go.
There might have been a little bit of like, universe, please help me out here. And maybe asking my dead grandma for help. Maybe a little bit of that.
There might have been a little. Okay. I was wondering because, I've definitely gone into moments of prayer.
Like, doesn't matter how much of an atheist you are, when you are desperate, you're like, I might as well give this a shot.
Yeah.
But I managed to make it out. And, you know, now it's like a good adventure.
Now it's your story.
Like, yeah. But yeah.
So you hiked all the high peaks. You've now skied the high peaks. What's your next goal?
I'm working on the lower 67 as well, just because I like to have a long-term project in the Catskills, just because it's my backyard, but it's so accessible. And I love myself a list, you know?
Yes.
So,
I love myself.
So when I finish that, then I'll be the first person to do that. No one else has done that.
Wow.
And then I have a few kind of like endurance ski things that I'm looking to do, but I don't want to say it yet. I'm kind of like,
okay,
let me see if I can do it, you know. I'll announce it after.
No, these are also tips as well. Like, different people have different viewpoints on, you know, if you should announce something, because then sometimes in a way it kind of like forces you to do it.
It depends on your personality.
You have enough of your own self-discipline and to like keep it close. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. Their cat still is based endurance things on skis.
Sweet. So, sweet. Yeah. And what other, are there any other questions that I didn't ask you just about the connections between, you know, some of the trauma healing, the lessons learned, some of the, just the great things that either being in the outdoors or having a hobby that connects you to others can do for us?
Well, you know, in terms of what the universe wants from us, we're all kind of like guessing, right? You know, and I'm very much aware that, like, you know, I'm guessing and I can revise, I'll probably revise things, you know, as I develop. But one thing that I'm very certain about is that empathy is evolution. So with each thing that I go through, it makes me more aware of the impact of my behavior on others, right? Because when you're on the receiving end of something, that's like when you notice stuff. And in those moments when you're like reeling from pain because someone has like hurt you or betrayed you in some way, you know, you do have like this decision, you know, either you're like, oh, you know what? Screw everybody. I'm going to be one of those people that I'm just going to be selfish. I'm going to take what I want. I don't care how I impact others because people don't care how they impact me. You can go that road. Or you can be like, oh, this feels terrible. I don't want to be someone that makes other people feel this way. And also when you're in those moments when you're like in, you know, your crisis mode and in the midst of your pain, you become very sensitive to the smallest gestures from other people, right? So like, you know, walking down the street and someone's inconsiderate gesture, you feel so much more powerfully. And then someone's kind gesture, you feel so much more powerfully. And I remember like when my father died, I remember saying to the universe, well, you know, how is this a life lesson? Like, just like people die, but I'm like really reeling from this. I didn't expect it to be this hard because we had such a contentious relationship. And I learned, I'll never forget this woman's face. I had to go to like, I don't know, it's like DOE offices downtown or something one day. And I was just like in such a, I legitimately had PTSD from that. Like I was like replaying scenes. Like I was with my dad while he was dying for 2 weeks. And like these super sad scenes were just playing over and over a loop in my head. And I was just like so upset and crying all the time. And like this woman, like I didn't expect her to be so nice to me. Like I remember her smiling at me and I was like, oh, it was like a break in the clouds. I always have flashbacks of this woman's face smiling at me. And it was such a realization of the impact that these small gestures have. And it makes you really aware of the ripple effect of your actions. And a lot of times we don't want the responsibility for how we make others feel, right? But the reality, it doesn't change the reality that we do have that impact on others. And, you know, you can either own it or you can be someone that is, you know, having a ripple effect that's, you know, often very negative. And her smile was like, oh, okay. And that just changed something inside of me. And I just became, you know, like, oh, I want to be someone that's like, I want to just, my go-to is to be pleasant and out of my way, like nice to people and to strangers and stuff like that. Cause maybe I'm having that impact of that woman's smile on me. And, you know, like, you know, at one point I was like really into NDE stories, like near death experience stories, even more so than, you know, the tunnel. One thing that I heard, I don't think there was a single NDE that I didn't hear where there wasn't the life review and that you're experiencing things from the perspective of the people that, you know, you impacted. And so many of these people that experienced the NDEs were like, I thought it was going to be these big life events. And it was these tiny gestures, like when I helped pay for someone's groceries who was ahead of me, who couldn't afford something or, you know, things like that. And showing, and they would see the ripple effect of how that impacted that person and how that person later went and helped others because of that. I just, a lot of times, I'm doing something and the universe just flashes that woman's smiling face. I'm like, okay, I get it, you know? And I think that woman is going to experience that in her near-death experience. She's going to experience Julie McGuire and how she made her feel.
Oh my gosh. I hope she does and gets to know.
Me too. I hope so too. I really do.
You know, what you just shared, first of all, bring me to tears. And it's backed by science. We did an episode on the science of kindness that folks can listen to. And you may not know this, Julie. Also, anyone that witnesses the small act of kindness is also impacted by it.
Okay.
So there's a third party. So, you know, if someone sees you smile at someone else or give someone change or hold a door or just, you know, and someone else witnesses that, they're also lifted up by watching that someone did that act for someone else. So
that makes sense. Cause like, when I think of like there are times when it's like, you know, I've seen like a man like stand up to offer a woman a seat on the subway or something. And like that like inspires me, like, you know, so
get a little jolt
to me. Yeah, it does. And I truly believe that if when you're going through things, it isn't opening your eyes to, it isn't making you more empathetic and opening your eyes to the impact of your actions on others, then I don't think you fully like transformed and healed from like what you went through. And I think that, you know, we all start off at our lives at like different levels of sight. And as we go through things and have different experiences, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, when you're at the eye doctor and like they're trying like, all right, so how's this one and how's this one? And like with each kind of like lens, it's like sharper and sharper. And that's what I feel like each traumatic event does. If you're processing it correctly, it makes your vision clearer and clearer so that you see the impact on others and you start to feel like another thing that happened, like with my dad's, that's like, I don't know, something kind of like broke through. I don't know how else to say it. It's like something broke, but in a good way. And ever since that, not only like do I, you know, really want to like help others, but like when I see people suffering, like I actually feel like physically like, oh, their pain, like in an intensity that I never, you know, felt before. You know, like, you know, like before I would just like I would see someone suffering and it like made me feel bad, but now I just like, I actually feel it like my own and like crazy. I'm like, oh, wow.
A lot of people are scared of that, you know, and you spoke to it. You said it. I'm just really highlighting some of the brilliant things that you've said. You know, you talked about how the, when you've been hurt or you're hurting, like the rawness, you get both. You get a more intensity of feeling people's pain. You get a more intensity of feeling a small thing bringing you joy.
Yeah.
And I believe, and it sounds like you do, that, you know, that's really living and opening yourself up. And I think we might have even spoken about this hiking or in one of our chats. But, you know, when we try to protect ourselves from pain and close ourselves off to pain, we cut off the openness to experiencing the joy as well.
Yes. And we're cutting up our evolution. We're stopping our evolution. Like I used to think, so like, you know, my family's always like, you're so sensitive. You're so sensitive. And I was like, I used to wish, I was like, God, I wish I wasn't so sensitive. I wish I didn't feel things as intensely as I did like when I was young. And now I kind of have a different perspective on it because when you're sensitive, you can't ignore your pain. You can't kind of like numb it really and push it like aside. It's just, you have to deal with it. And I think those that are able to distract themselves from their pain don't go through maybe as an intense, a transformative, you know, experience that brings them to this higher state of being. I think that even though it really sucks early in life when you kind of like don't understand it, when you later see like the purpose of pain and how it can change you, you know, you start to see it as something, it's valuable to be sensitive. It's valuable to feel pain. It's valuable to have this intensity. So yeah, I have a very different perspective on it now.
I feel like so many of the things that you shared today, I mean, they speak to all of us, but to especially folks who are grappling with suicidal ideation, And that was something that I didn't know about you. I know that you had been through some traumatic events, but then you've already shared so much that speaks to that community. I'm just curious, and if nothing comes to mind, no pressure, but if there's anything else that you want to say, or specifically to that community, or anything that someone did or said to you during those times that you found particularly helpful.
During those times, it was really very difficult. I don't think that, I mean, like, most people can't really like sit with someone in that state. I, you know, it's kind of funny that you work for a suicide hotline, because I remember there were so many times I'm like, can I call a hotline? Like, I think I might need to call hotline, but I was kind of like afraid to.
That's why I like people to know it's me. You know? I'm like, it's just more like.
Like, I was like, yeah, I wish I knew that, because like, I would definitely love to talk to you, you know? Like, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, all right, are they going to call the cops? I don't necessarily want the cops coming here.
Sure.
Like, what's that conversation going to be like? But I don't know. I think I used to kind of maybe even be afraid of community. And then like with the ski community and the way that they've embraced me in particular, the Northeast ski community, like more than anything else, what I find interesting, I think what it taught me is that, you know, despite, especially now where things are very politically divisive, it's so, I'm very focused on learning what brings people together and finding those things. And like, I mean, when we're all like spring skiing in Killington, like all the diehard skiers in the Northeast, you kind of converge there because we can ski until June. And I know that the people I'm hanging out with, like we all have very diverse socioeconomic backgrounds and definitely political beliefs. But in those moments, like, we do not care. We are our highest selves. We are thoroughly enjoying each other. We are having these like meaningful, like bonding moments. And it's made me very interested in kind of like finding those moments with people. And in terms of, I had a friend that really was there for me in terms of like helping me through my suicidal moments when I was like going through my divorce. And help comes from the most unexpected places. That's something I learned, because like this person is like, he's kind of like, because I don't want to give away his name. I don't think he wants people to know that he has like, you know, this good-hearted part to him. He's kind of like become like a political commentator and kind of like does trolling. Like I don't know, does like follow him on social media, because like, you know, like I'm not like into trolling, but I tell you, I could have texted him at 3 a.m. and this man would like use his like he's brilliant, and he would like use his reason to kind of like, you know, combat my irrational thoughts, and like he was just there for me in a way that nobody else was. And then like people that I thought were going to be there for me were like so disappointing, like in some ways like made things so much worse. And another thing I've learned is that there is a lot of rejection in seeking help. And I think like maybe that needs to be said, because I think, you know, whenever you hear about like mental health and people in crisis, you just hear, oh, go seek help, and make it seem like, oh, you're going to easily find it, or there's no rejection. There's a lot of rejection in seeking help. There's like, I remember a spiritual director that I had like during my dad's death, like I actually ended up making me feel like they were like, no, you're kind of like too much for me. And like kind of dealt me. Like, I was like, that's horrible. Like you work, you know, I'm not religious, but I still like turned to like a church thing. I was like, oh, maybe. Even though I don't like religious organizations, you know, I remember I tried bereavement groups. They're like, yeah, I don't think now's the time for you. You should wait. You know, fortunately, my mom was able to find the help, but I was just getting rejection after rejection, and just alone in my suffering, you know. So there's a lot of rejection in seeking help, but it often comes in unexpected places, or even just like a stranger that like appears in your life somehow for like just that period of time. I've had that happen during my divorce. It's just so strange the way things work.
Yeah, I hear like, you know, opening yourself up to those kind of odd synchronicities and those unexpected gifts from the universe, and it's true. When we're struggling, it can be very surprising who's there for us and who disappears.
Yeah, and who isn't? Yeah, yeah.
And you know, living up here in rural community, I've certainly had my, you know, stereotypes and ideas about, you know, who I could be friends with and learn about and spend time with, you know, as far as you know, political ideologies really knocked down. And there's a lot more to be said about that, and maybe a future episode on that very hot topic I've thought about going into. Julie, you've been amazing.
Oh, great.
I want to just real quick shout out, 988 is the hotline that you can call if you do want to talk to someone like me, for those, if you're, you know, feeling in crisis or suicidal. And we will not reject you. I will not reject
you. Lara, who's amazing to talk to.
But Julie, you've been amazing. So many, well, I'm just like, there's so much wisdom here. I'm so glad that I know you.
Likewise.
And I'm very excited to celebrate you and some really big things coming up for you. Can you tell us before we go about this movie that's been made about you?
Yeah. Well, talk about like another crazy thing that happened around my skiing. So Jamie Kennard, who was the first person to ski the Catskills High Peaks, now like speaking about like trauma, he like his wife had died of cancer, and he kind of like after that, like he started kind of like making these like short films, and he asked me to if he could do a short film about me skiing the Catskills High Peaks. So it's called Queen of the Catskills. It's coming out. We're working on which date's going to be the Catskills premiere, but it's been picked up by a number of like film festivals, like the Girl Winter Film Festival and the Women of the Mountains in Europe, and another one in in Canada. It's going to be in 30 cities around the U.S. and Canada just for the Girl Winter Film.
Oh my god!
Tour. But we're working on like Catskills dates and even more New York City dates.
So some of the dates are up. I saw,
yes,
right?
Some of the dates are up. It's queenofthecatskillsmovie.com.
Okay.
So the trailer is there, as are the dates. And I do go into, like, I go more into my experience in my 20s with that abusive person and my suicide attempts then and the role that skiing played in that. And yeah, so, you know, it's not just about, you know, me skiing them. It also has like some personal stories in there as well.
Great. So let's get out for that movie. I know there's dates in like a bunch of major cities.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, you know, there's one in New York. I saw there's one in Paramus for all my Jersey friends.
Yes, the one in Paramus.
But yeah.
Camp Moore, that I'm going to give a talk. They're going to show the film. We'll give a talk and there will be a Q&A for that one.
Oh, okay. I might have to get out of Jersey Crew.
oh, nice. Oh,
yeah. I mean, this is very exciting.
Thank you.
And is there another movie that you're a part of or you're featured in? Or was there, am I making that up? I thought
no,
there was
another one.
Okay. We got one is good, Julie.
Okay, Brad. I mean, they're like many skiers that are far superior to me that like don't even get like a 15-minute documentary. So
I thought there was something else that he's working on where you're also like featured in it. So it's not a movie just
no,
about.
But he is working on others that'll be coming out after me, but they're not about me and they're not just about skiing. Like they're
okay.
Yeah.
So this is the one. We're going to send people to that site and let's send them also to your Instagram, Queen of the Catskills, right?
Queen of the Catskills NY for Instagram.
NY, Queen of the Catskills NY. And we'll link that in the show notes so people can follow your story there and your great posts with more wisdom. Anywhere else you want them to follow you or anything else you want to ask of our listeners before we head out?
No, I think that's it. I hope to see a lot of people at the screenings of the documentary and, you know, on the trail.
Yes. And if you hike or ski with Julie, you know that you'll always be seeing someone on the trail that she knows. So you'll be making a friend or that knows her anyway. Yeah. Well, thank you, Julie, so much. And thank you for being a friend and someone to look up to on my journey as well. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. And I think that this podcast you do are amazing. They're such interesting topics. I think that this is such an important topic because everybody goes through trauma, and you're just showing people like ways to deal with it in a way that's productive and that's going to move them forward and not bring them backwards. I think it's so important. I remember like you were kind of like on the fence about continuing it. I'm like so glad that I keep seeing new episodes. I'm like,
listeners, I'm always on the fence about continuing, so please write a review. That helps. And like, let me hear from you if you, like Julie, are enjoying these shows. Thank you, Julie, so much.
As we buzz around the busy world, it becomes clear there are billions of paths. As we buzz around the busy world, we will appear in other people's photographs. As we speed through the centuries, we will collide and the light will bend. We will be accidentally immortalized in someone else's land.